Y'all ready? Y'all ready?
Yeah.
Let's go. Come on.
Tiger Rag Radio is on the air.
Let's crank this thing up.
We're statewide breaking down the latest happenings with LSU athletics.
This is us.
Hear from the coaches.
What's required and asked of you to represent our university.
The players.
Having fun and we working, baby. That's it, baby.
The recruits.
Show some passion and some heart.
And those who cover the Fighting Tigers of LSU and the SEC.
We're all in to finish what we've started.
It's 2 hours of nonstop LSU talk.
What a privilege. I mean, you get to represent LSU.
Tiger Rag Radio is brought to you by Cummins. Cummins creates power solutions that the world depends on. Louisiana Beef Industry Council. Boudreaux's Electrical Services. Sunshine Quality Solutions. Super Chevy Dealers. And Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. Get ready to talk Tigers with producer Andre Champagne and our host, Todd Horn, Jeff Palermo, and Glenn Gilbo.
Two great players that are better people than they are players.
This is Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Hello, welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. This is Glenn Gilbo, Tiger Rag editor with Todd Horn, Tiger Rag executive editor. And producer Andre Champagne. And we're now joined by LSU men's basketball coach Matt McMahon. Matt, how are you, bud?
I'm doing great. That title of executive sounds like a good title to have.
It's powerful, right? It's powerful. Speaking of powerful, Matt, you guys really exerted yourselves, and I'm sure it made you really proud the way you played against SMU, a quad one win against a team ranked in certainly in the top 40, and just an explosive offense filled with guards and quick play, and you beat them at their game. And what are your thoughts? How big was that game?
Well, it was huge. It was huge, Todd. I was thrilled to see the way our players performed. I think, you know, a little fatigued coming out of the 4 days and nine. Four games in 9 days away from home. We had our two worst halves of the year from an offensive standpoint, the second half at Boston College and then the first half at Texas Tech. So I was excited to see us get back to playing more to our identity, which is playing with great pace in the open floor. We scored 50 points in the paint, which has been a strength of ours. And, of course, I was thrilled to see Max McKinnon shoot the ball so well. Goes 8-9 from the floor, 6-7 from three, coming off a game where he really struggled in the first half at Texas Tech.
Right.
So
right.
I thought it was a great win for us. I think SMU's got a really good team. Watch them beat Mississippi State. Watch them beat Texas A&M. Butler, as you said, really explosive offense. So while I was thrilled with our offensive performance coming back, I thought defensively, especially in the second half, really dialed in there and did enough to limit their firepower on the perimeter.
Well, you know, I want to talk about Pablo Tamba some, because not only did he have a double-double and a really good game, but I understand he stepped in and you know, a position that you really didn't have him slated for whenever you first, you know, recruited him. Brought him into the program, but he's like just had some an amazing stretch there. I mean, it was like back to back to back to back Tamba plays.
He saw his motor, Todd. He plays with great energy on both ends of the floor. Really versatile defender, can guard any position on the court. But where you saw him really flourish offensively was out in transition, running the floor, and then crashing the offensive glass. I think the play that got a lot of attention for him was the missed three where he came from the top of the key and dunked it with two hands in traffic. But the lob pass DJ Thomas to him from half court, and he caught it and reversed it with his left hand all in one motion on the other side of the rim was like the E and horse type yeah. shot. And but just thought he was fantastic out there.
That was the Tombahawk is what it's I've heard it called.
Now. I like that.
Yeah, Tombahawk.
I like that.
Hey, one more quick question for you, and then I'll Glenn's itching to ask you at least one or two. but the you know, you'd put a lot of emphasis on Michael Nwoko not getting into foul trouble, and then he only made it a minute and a half before you had to sit him down.
Right? Great coaching. Yeah.
I mean, is that concerning, or was that some undisciplined?
Well, it was. It's concerning, but I think some of that had to do with the fact, you know, of the Turkish Tower. I can't pronounce his last name, yeah, but he's a really good player. He's 7'2" and 275 pounds listed. I would argue he's a little more than that, but he's really skilled, really good player, and really caused us some problems there early in the game. And it turned out going smaller with Pablo and Markel at the two forward spots ended up being a better matchup for us there in the first half because of their speed against the size and power of the big fella down there.
Listening
to answer your question, Todd, Mike does have to quit fouling. throw him off the team. Yeah.
We're talking to LSU basketball coach Matt McMahon here on Tiger Egg Radio from the Super Chevy Dealers Studio. Matt, you might not have heard it, but the Andy Enfield, the SMU coach, after the game, he was talking about Max McKinnon, and he said 8 of 9 from the field, 6 of 7 from three-point range, or 6 of 8 from three-point range. He said that's hard to do, like in pregame warm-ups when nobody's guarding. And I mean, he was just on. Could you tell right off?
Well, he had a good week of practice. You know, I think like multiple members of our program, disappointed in the way we played at Texas Tech. So I think he had a really good week in preparation. You know, he's now had the two games where I believe he was 6 of 8 from three against Omaha at home, and then 6 of 7 from three there on Sunday. He's up to 45% from the three-point line on the year. And, you know, I think he's you underestimate how his size. He's a legit 6'6", and doesn't need much time or space to get that three off. He had such a good stretch. You know, him and DJ Thomas were on the all-tournament team down in Destin. He played really well there, hit the big three in overtime and the win up at Boston College, and then just had the first half at Texas Tech where he didn't make shots. And so credit to him for how he responded and came back. He's a really smart player, really has great understanding of the game, and I was excited for him to see his hard work pay off with that outstanding performance.
And I wanted to ask you, Matt, with Jalen Reed out, who was taking up? Who do you see taking up most of the minutes he was playing? Is that Pablo and Robert Miller the third, or is there someone else?
Well, we got some more curveballs there with Rob and Mike's foul trouble in New Orleans on Saturday, but last week was important for us because really from the time Jalen suffered the unfortunate injury, we didn't have any practice time with the two games in Destin, the trip to Boston, and then over to Fort Worth. So we got to practice some different lineups last week during exams. In a perfect world, you'll see Mike and Woko's minutes continue to rise. As we previously discussed, has to stay out of foul trouble for that to happen. I think Rob Miller's versatility to play at the 4 and the 5 will allow his minutes to increase. And then I probably the biggest change, though, Glenn, was really since June 1st, we've only worked with Markel Sutton at the 3 position. And, you know, he's played the 4 and the 5 his whole life. So, you know, last week we were able to spend some time moving him back to that forward position, and what a response he had, you know, 23 points and 12 rebounds. So I think we're well equipped. Obviously, I'm absolutely devastated and heartbroken about the situation with Jalen, but I do like our personnel being equipped with the versatility to figure some things out and still have a chance to win games.
The Tigers are back in action Friday night. Finally get back home, Southeastern, 7 p.m. Friday. Then you got Prairie View, 6 p.m. Monday. Southern Miss on Monday, December 29th. Before the SEC opener at Texas A&M, Saturday, January 3rd, 3 p.m. ESPNU. Matt, is it a bit of a relief that the SEC is not the great – I mean, it's still really good, but it's not just setting the world on fire like it was at this time last year. Is that – how do you view that?
No, I mean, I think there's opportunities there. I mean, it's still by far, if you look at the computer rankings, the number one league in the country. So to say it's down or has fallen back, I think is incorrect. But last year was, I mean, that's a historic season. It's the greatest conference season in the history of college basketball by a wide margin. So I still think the league is really good. I still think you'll see a ton of teams make the NCAA tournament. And, you know, our job here is to finish up this week strong, hopefully build on some of the momentum of the performance on Saturday down in New Orleans, which was a great event for us. It was great to be back in the home state after a few weeks away and see what we can get accomplished here heading into Christmas break. And then we'll worry about the SEC after that.
Well, Matt, when you talk about the SEC being down relative to last year,
he didn't say down.
Well, no.
relative. Well, I mean, there's only one way to go relative to last year.
That's true.
I mean, that was ridiculous.
But how does that impact, you know, I mean, you're like, I think, 31 in the net right now or 32,
yeah.
Which is good at this time of year. But it's going to affect your quad one opportunities in the SEC this year. Is that going to be a negative impact on your chance of making the NCAA tournament by the time we get to the end of the year?
No, absolutely not. I mean, the SEC is still by far the number one conference in the country, and there'll still be tons of quad one opportunities when you get into league play. And so, you know, I was actually studying that yesterday. You know, there are 8 teams ahead of us in the net right now that don't have a quad one win at all yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 32% of the top 50 teams in the net don't have any quad one wins yet. And so there'll be plenty of opportunities when you get to SEC play to improve your computer rankings. Now, obviously you got to win to do that. But I think, you know, being in the strongest league in the country only, certainly relative to last year, it's still the number one league in the country. So those opportunities are still there.
With DJ at point, you know, he's obviously had he had a great game. I think 12 points and 12 assists against SMU, and that was a career high in assists. But he struggled in the second half against Boston College, not in the overtime, but in the second half at least. And he struggled against Texas Tech. Is there any problem there or concern, or have you corrected that with him?
No, I don't think he struggled. I mean, at Boston College, he's 8 of 21 from the floor. I know he'd like to shoot a higher percentage, but, you know, went on the 8-0 run to end the second half to get us to overtime and then scored the first four in the second. And then at Texas Tech, you know, just did not shoot it well. You know, I think you'll continue to see him score the ball well for us, but you know, he was only credited with one assist in that game. He actually had four by the grade, but he created 15 assist opportunities in the game. We just didn't make any shots.
Mm-hmm.
So no concerns at all on my end. I look forward to watching him play on Friday night. He lets you sleep well at night when you have a guy like that running the team.
Yeah, he's a coach on the floor, man. His assists are really amazing. You can tell he's looking for his targets before he's even at half court, man.
Well said.
All right, Matt, thanks a lot for joining us. Try to get in your Christmas shopping and have a good rest of the month here. 3 games. Good luck to you. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. I look forward to seeing you on Friday night, 7:00 at the PMAC.
All right, we'll be there.
Thanks, Matt.
Tune into this Tiger Rag radio on the podcast tonight on your favorite podcasts, your favorite place to catch a podcast, YouTube, and TigerRag.com. We'll be back with more Tiger Rag radio and talking to Glenn West about LSU basketball right after this.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. For more than 100 years, Louisiana Farm Bureau has been the voice of Louisiana agriculture. Louisiana Farm Bureau advocates on behalf of all the farmers and ranchers across our great state. What that really means is we advocate for you to ensure we have the safest, most abundant, and affordable food supply in the world. Louisiana Farm Bureau is 145,000 members strong, and we want you to join the Louisiana Farm Bureau family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Tiger Rag Radio is back on the air, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. This is Glenn Gilbo, Tiger Rag editor, with executive editor Todd Horn and producer Andre Champagne Oso. And we are live from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio. If you want to catch that Matt McMahon interview we just had, that was cool. That will be on a podcast on YouTube shortly after the show, or you can get it anywhere where you catch your podcast. It'll also be on the TigerRag.com website later tonight. But that was an impressive win by the Tigers, especially when they just lost bad to a team that has really good guards, and then they beat a team with really good guards. And really, SMU was never really in the game for much at all.
LSU dominated the pretty much the whole game. I mean, they built a 15-point lead in the first half and extended it again in the second half after a brief rally in late in the second half by SMU. That was really the only time they showed that they could contend with LSU. Other than that, it was, like you said, it was pretty much dominant.
Yeah, and, you know, still, we're not in the SEC yet, but I'm impressed with how they've recovered from not having Jalen Reed off the bench, because they're still playing pretty well inside with Pablo, with no Mike Nwoko when he's not in foul trouble, and Markel Sutton, you know, came here to kind of play three, and he's been playing four and five, you know, and and Max McKinnon is, I mean, really he's a guard, but he's a tall guard, and he can get in there and get his rebounds too. So it looks like they're going to be okay inside, and I just love the point guard. So they're really a lot better than they were last year.
Yeah, they're more physical. They're built more for the SEC, like we've talked about, and they're showing that. They also have more depth, as illustrated by Reed going down and not impacting them nearly as much. And I think the most important thing, I mean, all those factors are very important, but I think they have a really solid chance of making the NCAA tournament this year, primarily because they're playing together. And this is a brand new team. I mean, they only had Jalen Reed and Robert Miller III were the only two that were back from last year's roster. And this team looks like they've been
down to one. Yeah.
Yeah, they look like they've been together for years. That's amazing to me. And I think that's why Southeastern and the other two games they have before they start SEC, they need them a little bit more time together to continue to develop that chemistry and stay focused on the things that I'm sure Matt wants them to improve upon. But I think that they're going to make the NCAA tournament this year. I really do.
Well, if they can just hover around 500 all year, you know, never get like three or four games under 500, and you're around 9 or 10 wins, I think they'll get in.
Yeah, well, so look, they're going to go in probably, 12-1.
They're 9-1 right now.
Yeah, so they'll be 12-1
going into A&M.
Going into, if they can get, I think Southern Miss is the biggest hurdle they have. That would be the last game that Southern Miss has played fairly decent basketball this year. But let's say they're 12-1, 18 game SEC schedule. They win 9, then they'll be 21-10.
Yeah,
that'll probably get them in.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And they have, you know, they have a quality quad one win, and they've only had two chances for quad one wins. And if they win 9 games in the SEC, you know, probably 4 of those will be quad one. You know, so they should be there. But
and that'll you know, move up and down during the course of the year. Teams will go into quad one and drop out of quad one, but I think overall, I think that would be good enough to get them in. And they're going to head into the season with a high net ranking relative to what they had last year.
Yeah, you said they're like 32. I think the highest they ever got last year was in the 50s.
Yeah,
and I don't even think they were there long.
Yeah,
at all.
But what, you know, switching gears while we got time, I know Glenn's going to come on, Glenn West with 247 Sports, and we're going to talk to him more about basketball and football. But your buddy Paul Feinbaum today I think it was today, made a comment that when I think the subject was why Brian Kelly hasn't been in high demand for a job right now. This is the same guy that had him had Brian Kelly on his show
every Monday.
Every Monday,
and was kind of nice to him.
Really nice to him. Really nice to him for the last couple of years, right?
Yeah, they must have had some kind of arrangement.
He didn't even explain this comment. He just said Brian Kelly's arrogant.
He said that?
Yep, and with no explanation as to what he was referring to.
Wow. Well,
but we talked about it earlier. He's got a potential chance to be the Michigan coach.
I don't know. I haven't heard his name at all, other than my column.
I actually did. I have heard his name.
I mean, he was up on some lists, but and there'll be a job. You know, the trickle down effect. He might get one, and if not this year, I would think he'll get one next year. But he's not somebody they're going after. Anybody's really aggressive
because he's arrogant.
There's a lot of coaches who are arrogant who get jobs.
I thought that was a very uncharacteristic statement.
Yeah, it was. It was. He's not a hot commodity right now. He's not. But I will be surprised if he doesn't get a head coaching job if he wants it at some point. If not this year, next year. We'll be back. This time we will be back with Glenn West at the bottom of the hour at 7:30 here on Tiger Rag Radio from the Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. For more than 100 years, Louisiana Farm Bureau has been the voice of Louisiana agriculture. Louisiana Farm Bureau advocates on behalf of all the farmers and ranchers across our great state. What that really means is we advocate for you to ensure we have the safest, most abundant, and affordable food supply in the world. Louisiana Farm Bureau is 145,000 members strong, and we want you to join the Louisiana Farm Bureau family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio, we're back to Tiger Rag Radio.
Welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. We're coming down the home stretch. This is Glenn Gilbo, Tiger Rag Editor, with Tiger Rag Executive Editor Todd Horn and producer Andre Champagne. We're now joined by Glenn West of Go247. Glenn, how are you tonight, buddy?
Do all right, guys. Fighting a little bit of a head cold, but I think it's the elements here. Hot, cold, that just seems to be the trend we're on right now with the weather. So
it is.
We're doing all right.
So it's supposed to actually be warm the rest of the week, so maybe it'll get a little more stabilized for you there, Glenn. But
I hope so.
we want to talk about basketball. Obviously, we just got off with Matt, and that was a huge quad one win over SMU this weekend in New Orleans. It was very important for LSU to get that, especially coming off of what happened against Texas Tech. But they had four players combining for 75 points. What was your biggest takeaway from the win over SMU and how the transfers have meshed so far this season?
Yeah, I think for me, probably the biggest thing that stood out was just the blueprint of them winning in the SEC is exactly how they have to play from that game against SMU. They did a really nice job in a lot of different areas. And I think for me, the one thing that stands out, of course, if anytime you shoot 60% from the floor and 45% from three, you have a pretty good chance at winning, but it's how they got those shots and how they got those points that makes this really a transferable brand of basketball. And it really starts with having shooting wings, to be quite honest with you. They finally had some luck behind the three-point arc with Max McKinnon knocking down six threes. And SMU had to respect that. They had to respect LSU as a perimeter team because of the way that they were shooting the ball from the outside. And, you know, this is going to be very much an inside-out offense. And the only way to open up things in the paint and at the free throw line for this team is being able to prove that you can hit outside shots. And right. So they're going to need other players besides just McKinnon to step up. But that was a real nice step forward for them to do that against an opponent like SMU that's got NCAA tournament aspirations, just as LSU does. And so it was a great win. It was a really controlled game, I think, from start to finish. You know, LSU really felt like the team that was, you know, throwing all the punches and making a lot of and landing a lot of the haymakers. And so it's definitely something that they can look back on come January when the competition heats up again.
And so, Glenn, you know, this team is different than Matt's previous three teams. I mean, you know, they always had a decent record or a good record heading into the SEC play. And then it was like, you know, except for 2 years ago, they weren't really competitive in the SEC. But this team's built differently. And like you said, you know, the playing from inside out and having to hit the outside shot and having multiple people that can do that. This team is different. And this team, I think this team can actually do well in the SEC. I'm not saying they're going to win the SEC or, you know, they may not even have a winning record in the SEC, but I think they can win enough to make the NCAA tournament. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that they can be much more competitive, and I think honestly it starts with having a point guard like Dedon Thomas. They just have not had that in previous years under Coach McMahon, and having just this floor general who's able to just set people up, get to his own spots, and really be able to read defenses the right way and get his teammates good open looks, I think has been a real game changer for LSU. You know, he had 12 assists and just two turnovers in that game against SMU. I can't remember the last time an LSU point guard had 12 assists in a game before Dedon did this last weekend. But having that kind of point guard that can really just lead everything offensively, I think you've seen just the benefits of having that kind of a point guard. And then just, you know, I think that they were more aggressive in the portal. And you mentioned the transfers earlier. They spent good money on guys like Michael Nwoko and Markel Sutton and certainly Max McKinnon. They're going to need some more of those guys to step up for sure, I think, in SEC play. You're going to have to stay out of foul trouble in the front court, because that is maybe my one concern now, is that LSU is a little bit thinner in the front court positions with the loss of Jalen Reed. So they've got to find different ways when guys get in foul trouble or aren't playing well. They're going to have to find ways for that front court to still be effective with Sutton. And you saw that on Saturday, I thought, when they played Sutton a little bit more at the five, when Nwoko and Robert Miller got into some foul trouble. And I think that's something that they can practice and explore a little bit more if in an emergency situation going forward.
And you, Glenn, you talked about Dedon, and you talked about how good of a pure point guard he is. Two things. One, do you think he is really one of the best point guards in the conference and the country? And two,
I think yeah.
All right, go ahead. You can answer that, and I'll ask.
No, I think he's one of the most underrated point guards in the conference and probably the country too. I just think what he does from a playmaking perspective is unlike anything they've had at LSU in a while. And you know, he's going to need those guys around him though to make shots and to make plays. And so I think having that playmaker and having that floor general is the first part of it. Now you want to see some consistency with the other guys and being able to make those shots and convert on those opportunities going forward.
Does it bother you or concern you that they don't have anybody that's really getting any time backing him up? Jalen Reese, of course, is the freshman point guard, and he looks like a more mature player than a freshman, but he doesn't have the experience. Is that a concern?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, like, I think that Dedon's probably going to have to play, you know, 35 minutes for you a game in SEC play, and that's going to be a tall task, but one that I think LSU's going to have to really lean into. You know, one of the lineups that they trotted out there actually had Dedon and Jalen Reese on the floor at the same time. I think they're just looking for any kind of combinations where they can have multiple playmakers out on the floor at the same time. I think McKinnon can give you that to a certain extent. Hopefully, you know, Markel Sutton can continue to develop as a playmaker as well. They have some guys that are capable of doing it, but it's going to have to, it can't all be Dedon. Like, they're going to have other guys make plays, you know, get their own shots when they need to, when possessions are maybe breaking down. Like, that, all that stuff is really important in SEC play, because these defenses in the SEC are not going to just give you freebies. They're going to make you earn every point that you get.
Yeah, the only thing I think Dedon probably needs, the only weak spot I see right now, is he's only 7 of 29 from three-point range. That's 24%.
Yeah.
I'm sure he can shoot better than that. But I just wanted to hear what you say about this, Glenn. To me, this is a real versatile team. Look at Markel Sutton. He He's averaging, let's see, 14, almost 14 points a game, 9 rebounds, and he's a good three-point shooter, too. I mean, you usually don't see a rebounder like that. He's hitting 30% from three-point range. McKinnon can also rebound a little bit. Pablo can rebound. You know, sometimes he scores. He's averaging about 6. But do you think, like, if Deaton just has a bad game, where do you think they are there?
Yeah, I think that they probably are a little bit in trouble if Deaton has a bad game. Like, I think that he is so much the center of what they're trying to do on the offensive side of the floor that everything kind of goes through him. But, you know, Sutton is a guy that I think can really hit the outside shot. He's, like you mentioned, a very versatile wing and somebody that I think LSU really is going to need to hit at a more consistent rate here in SEC play as an outside scorer.
Okay, Glenn, you're going to stay with us through the break, right?
Yep.
Okay, we'll be back with more Tiger Rag Radio right after this.
Now, back to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio with Glenn Gilbo, editor of Tiger Rag here. Todd Horn, executive editor, and Andre Champagne, our producer. We're rejoined by Glenn West from Go247 Sports. Glenn, you had a great piece on Whit Weeks. What's your gut feeling? Do you think he's going to end up coming back to the Tigers?
I do. I really think that there are a lot more positives than negatives of Weeks coming back. I think the biggest negative is, you know, the re-injury risk after a year full of injuries for him. But I just think there's so much that aligns with him, and certainly retaining Blake Baker, I think, is a huge piece to that. I think that he's shown that he can be a huge leader for this team when he's on the field, somebody that I think can have a really big bounce-back senior kind of year, can go out as one of the greats if he has the kind of season that LSU is going to be striving for in year one under Lane Kiffin. I think that there's a lot that makes sense in him coming back, and he'll also be compensated well. Like, I think that he'll get an NIL deal that's, you know, worthy of a you know, day three kind of pick in the NFL draft, and that's kind of where I see him right now. I don't know that he gets into the top three rounds of the NFL draft, and if your NIL compensation to come back to LSU for another year, run it back for another championship, get to play with your younger brother for a second year, I think there's a lot there that could be appealing for Whit to come back. So I do think he's back.
Do you think he's the most important element for that defense to come back?
I think to come back, yes. I think he's, you know, of the guys that, you know, are kind of maybe on the fence, then yes. But in terms of just the most important element, I love what this secondary has the potential to turn into next year. Like, DJ Pickett, PJ Woodland, that can be your starting cornerbacks, you know, no questions asked. I think safety, if you're able to get Tamarcus Cooley back, you get Deshaun Spears in year three. You have some really exciting young prospects, I think, that are developing at those two positions as well. I think that I wrote about this today as well. I do think that kind of your best position group on the entire roster for the future and what it looks like is in that secondary. I'm really impressed with those guys and think that they have a chance to be really, really good next year.
Speaking of the defensive backs, has there been a decision reached, or what are you hearing about Corey Raymond definitely coming back?
I think he's back. Like, I think that they've done a nice job of retaining the defensive staff. The only guy that I don't think will be back is Kyle Williams, the defensive line coach. And that's a position that is still open at this point. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if Lane ends up promoting his, you know, brother, Chris Kiffin, to that role. Chris has a lot of experience coaching the defensive line at both the NFL and the college level. It makes a lot of sense if they're not able to go out there and get the home run, hire a guy at the defensive line spot. But I do think that Corey will be back. He was definitely a priority, especially after they were able to retain Blake Baker. Those pieces really kind of fit, you know, kind of came into line after Blake Baker made his decision last week.
Switching sides of the ball, I mean, obviously the talk about quarterback with Chambliss, you know, possibly getting his waiver so he can have an additional year and then transferring to LSU. We've talked about it. That Glenn just wrote an article about it. You know, everybody's talking about it, but it's still up in the air. Of course, DJ Lagway, Florida's quarterback, who's probably the most talented quarterback with career upside, talking to NFL, who just said he's going to enter the portal.
TJ Finley.
TJ
Finley.
Coming
back to LSU. What do you think?
Yeah. There you go.
What is he, 35?
Seventh year's charm, right?
See, 35?
But
yeah.
What do you? I mean, I know we talked a little bit about it last week, but who do you think they really need to get, and how many quarterbacks do they need to get in the transfer portal? And is there any quarterback available to sign in February that we don't know about? Because I don't know about any.
Yeah, I think there's a couple guys that really make sense to me. I think Chambliss is one. I wrote about him today as well. You know, if he gets that waiver, it really just makes all the sense in the world when all of his coaches are going to be at LSU next year. He knows the system really well. I think that makes a ton of sense if he's able to get that extra waiver year. If he doesn't and he has to go to the NFL, I think for me, Sam Leavitt at Arizona State is the one to really keep an eye on. I think he's an ideal fit for what Lane Kiffin likes to do with his quarterbacks. He can really run the football. I think he has 10 touchdowns over his last couple of years running the ball. He had a great year, obviously, last year leading Arizona State to the college football playoff. Had it hampered a little bit this year with that injury, and it's going to be an injury that probably takes him through at least a decent portion of the offseason as well. So that's maybe the one caveat of bringing in a guy like that. But he does everything that I think Lane Kiffin wants his quarterbacks to do. And so I think Sam Leavitt, if he goes in the portal, which all indications are that he will, I would expect LSU to be calling pretty soon after that portal, after he enters the portal on January 2nd.
I'm wondering if the NCAA compliance people at Ole Miss are telling their NCAA contacts in Indianapolis, look, you know what? We don't think Trinidad has a good case after all. And then the LSU compliance people are up there. Hey, come on. We got to get this guy a year.
Yeah, look, I've listened to a couple of his press conferences. He sounds like a really great human being. I hope he gets it because, you know, he spent so much of his time in his college career at, you know, the Division II level, very much overlooked. I would love to see him get it and love to see him in Baton Rouge, but we'll see. I think it's still very much up in the air of whether or not he gets that.
Do you think Van Buren stays?
I do. I think just gut feeling right now, Van Buren stays, and if not, it's going to be real hard to get three quarterbacks in here. Like I think if Van Buren stays and you add two, that's okay. It gets you through this year.
September 19th, baby. LSU at Ole Miss. It's going to be a bloodbath.
Oh, I can't wait. Can't wait.
All right, Glenn.
I'll be disguised in my Ole Miss red that weekend. I don't need any Ole Miss fans coming up to me on the walk over to the stadium.
I think I'll be able to pick you out, man.
Yeah, I know. That's exactly.
All right, Glenn, thanks for joining us.
All right. Thanks, guys.
We'll be back. Wrap up the show. A couple of more segments right after this on Tiger Rag Radio.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with five available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious with multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice,
making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
How you doing? This is Snoop Dogg.
Tiger Rag. Tiger Rag Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, you are tuned in.
Talk LSU sports, interviews, opinions, and your calls around the Tiger Nation.
Bad Road was a life for me. Home with LSU Tigers.
Now more Tiger Rag Radio.
Hey, we love to score and get highlights and championships and play to win.
Tiger Rag Radio.
Welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. Final segment. Glenn Gilbo, Tiger Rag editor here with Todd Horn, executive editor, and Andre Champagna, producer. I want to thank our guests tonight. We had Mark Slabaugh from ESPN.com, former Atlanta Journal-Constitution writer. And, you know, that's always been, well, it was a great paper back in the day. The AJC has its last printed version on December 31st, New Year's Eve of this year. Sad day. It was a great paper at one time. Corey Diaz from the USA Today, Louisiana, was with us as well. He brought up some great points about the Scott Woodward exit from LSU after Brian Kelly. And, of course, men's basketball coach Matt McMahon on top of the world right now, still going into the SEC. Matt was great with us. And then Glenn West continuing on about basketball and football. And LSU's roster is not in good shape right now.
No, and you can thank Austin Thomas for that. No, I'm just kidding. Austin Thomas, by the way, who was the general manager for LSU last year, who did have a large play in building this roster, and now he's headed back to Ole Miss, from what we understand. So,
good. I mean, is Ole Miss starting to look like LSU's JV team?
Yeah, it is. It's kind of like, yeah, whatever, JV or flunkies, whatever how you want to look at it. That's pretty rough, huh? But
Austin did a good job getting that portal class together, but you never know about portal classes. You know,
and we were just talking about with basketball. I think that's the key to what Matt McMahon has put together with all these transfers. They've got that chemistry. LSU didn't ever have that.
Right. And that's coaching. You know, that a lot of that is coaching, because you got to be able to get them together really quick. But the portal is kind of a crapshoot, though. Because you don't know how good they are. They had some great players, but you worry about the culture.
That's why getting Lane Kiffin was so important. He's the transfer portal king.
He is.
He's the NIL king. And I understand, you know, he was guaranteed $25 to $30 million that LSU was going to put towards that roster every year. I understand that's up to $40 million for this
year.
Where'd
that come from?
Various sources.
Wow.
You know, we did already, you know, we heard that donations were up significantly the first week after Kiffin was hired, along with ticket sales, which were up 15,000 for season tickets, which is that's a huge number.
All right. Do you think LSU, you're going to get asked this too, Andre, do you think LSU makes the playoffs in 2026?
I think that they need to get a quarterback. They need to get some offensive linemen. They need to get
They're going to get a quarterback.
I mean, when I say a quarterback, I mean they're going to need, like Glenn said,
I mean,
two
they're going
quarterbacks.
To get Well, Lane tends to get two.
Yeah, I know. But so this is what I'm telling you: if they get Lagway or Chambliss or Leavitt, you know, and another quarterback, and they have Van Buren, they get some offensive linemen, and they get a wide receiver, and they get probably Kewon Lacy. Then I think they're in the playoffs.
How about you, Andre?
I will say, ask me this after January 16th.
Loser. No. You're a loser.
No, because look.
No, that's the point.
Well,
you
I'll
see,
say
you
no
have to
then.
Make a,
I'll say no with right now with the roster they have.
Well, then the roster's going to change. It just got $40 million.
That's what I'm saying.
But they really do have to rebuild the roster.
Yes.
Yeah, they do.
And in my opinion, they have to do addition by subtraction. So I don't think that we've seen the last of guys kind of being pushed out, in my opinion.
Let me tell you, that if Lane Kiffin can take that Ole Miss team that was much better roster-wise last year than heading into this year and turn them into that, then he's got the resources and the ability to do much more than that at LSU. And that's what's expected of him.
His first year at Ole Miss, though, they were not great. I'm thinking they'll be pretty good next year, but not playoffs. Thank you for joining us on Tiger Rag Radio. We'll see you next week.
Tiger Rag is everywhere. Online at TigerRag.com. Like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tiger Rag Magazine. Or follow us on Twitter at Tiger_Rag.